Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Graham Russell and Russell Hitchcock met on May 12, 1975, the first day of rehearsals for Jesus Christ Superstar in Sydney, Australia. They became instant friends with their common love for the Beatles and, of course, singing. After the show's performances at 10:30, they would play pizza parlors, coffee bars, and nightclubs with just one guitar and two voices. They quickly gained a reputation for great harmonies and for original songs that Graham was constantly writing. They made a demo on a cassette of two songs, Love and Other Bruises and If You Knew Me, and took it to every record company in Sydney. Everyone turned it down, but one CBS Records, who admired their unique style. They made a single in one afternoon, and it shot to number one on the national charts. Air Supply was born. That same year, they opened for Rod Stewart across Australia, and then throughout the U.S. and Canada, playing all of the famous huge venues before Rod would take the stage. They found new fans, but did not break the U.S. market yet. Back in Australia, they had to start again and made a record called Life Support. On this record were some treasures of songs, including Lost in Love, which went top 10 in Australia and somehow found its way to music industry executive Clive Davis in New York. Clive immediately signed Air Supply to Arista Records, and in 1980, Lost in Love became the fastest-selling single in the world, leaping to the top of all of the charts. Now Air Supply was on their way. His second single was All Out of Love, and that went up the charts even quicker. Seven top five singles later, Air Supply at that time had equaled the Beatles' run of consecutive top five singles. The albums Lost in Love, The One That You Love, Now and Forever, and The Greatest Hit sold in excess of 20 million copies. Lost in Love was named Song of the Year in 1980, and with the other singles sold more than 10 million copies. The trademark sound of Russell Hitchcock's soaring tenor voice and Graham Russell's simple yet majestic songs created a unique sound that would forever be known as Air Supply. However, it is the live shows that always hold audiences captive around the world. Lost in Love, All Out of Love, The One That You Love, Sweet Dreams, and Making Love Out of Nothing at All have each achieved multi-million plays on the radio. Please welcome Graham Russell, singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist for legendary soft rock group Air Supply, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Graham.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Man, you made a lot of hits.
Ray. Well, it sounds good. That spear you just gave was really good.
Oh, thank you, thank you. There's a lot more, but I couldn't get it in.
Right. Cool.
Well, you're from Nottingham, and I just recently had a gentleman on my show from Nottingham, Leo Lyons from the 10 Years After, and
Oh wow! I used to go and see them when they before they were 10 Years After, they were called the Jaybirds, and I used to go and see them play at colleges in Nottingham when I was about 14 years old. Yeah.
He's in a band now called 170 Split. It's a great new band. I recommend them highly if you want to go out and pick up one of their albums.
Oh, I probably will do that. I didn't think there were that many musicians from Nottingham that kind of break through, you know.
Right.
I've heard of Leo for a long time, though. I've seen it for a long time.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Let's talk. Yeah. I heard, and I think I'm one of the first to mention this, you guys got a new album coming out, don't you?
We do. It's actually out. It came out 2 days ago. It's a live album, but it's with the Prague Symphony Orchestra. It's beautiful.
You know, I was going to ask you if you guys ever played with an orchestra, and there's my answer.
Yeah, we do. We're devoting a lot of the shows this year to symphony shows. We're going to Australia, Mexico, Israel, playing all symphony shows, and quite a lot of them. I think we're doing about 20 so far this year.
So that works. Whatever town you're in, you pick up a local symphony, I guess, in that city, right? Is that how? Yeah.
Yeah, we travel with a conductor.
Right.
But we pick up a symphony orchestra wherever we go, and we come to sound check, and we play the whole show with them, and go from there. The great thing about symphonies is that it's very difficult to be able to get into a symphony as a string player. So the players that are there are absolutely the best around, you know, they're just great players. So it's nice to play with different instrumentalists all across the country and all across the world, you know, because they're just great players.
Well, how do you do that? How do you get your acoustic sound out there I guess it's the engineer's problem, but how does that work?
Yeah. Well, it is the engineer's problem, but fortunately, everything I play is direct. You know, my acoustic guitar is direct. Even I play through two amplifiers.
Right.
To get stereo, of course, and they're direct as well. And they're actually buried way off stage because I play really loud, but the audience doesn't hear it that way, you know. But we have a shields up. You know, we have shields up around my amps too, and around Aaron, our lead guitarist, amp. We have shields, and we travel with a drum shield so that the string players they're not bombarded with all that high energy sound, you know. It's kind of an art, but they've got it under control these days, you know.
How hard is it to rehearse with a symphony?
Oh, it's good. You know, we just do our thing, and we stop and start at the conductor's discretion if there's something that's a little vague.
Right.
But usually, everything runs pretty smooth. You know, our charts, they're not super difficult, but there are a lot of tricky runs in there, a lot of notes played in a short space of time. So we need to rehearse with them. But once they figure it out, they go, oh, okay, I know what I'm doing. They're okay. Almost all the players in the different orchestras, they know the music anyway, so they've kind of got a grip on it. It's not like they're coming from the cold.
Right.
They know where everything's going to go. They know all the songs already, which really helps us, and it helps the evening.
Where is this album recorded?
It was recorded in Prague.
Okay.
And in Czech, and some of it was done in the U.S. as well, but not a lot.
Air Supply is such a great band. Oh, my God. You know, I was really, when I talked to Steve, you know, I told him, you know, I've been talking to him for a while, and I told him how excited I am to get you guys on the show, because you guys are such a wonderful band.
Well, you know, we pride ourselves on sounding good live.
Right.
You know, we've been together a long time, and, you know, we've played these songs a lot of times, so we've kind of got it all down. But for us, you know, there's so many different mediums. You can be in the studio, but for us, it's we really enjoy playing live and seeing the reactions on people's faces. That's really the ultimate test for any band, I think. And it's okay being able to record whatever you want, which is great, but you've got to play live, and you've got to deliver, and but when you do, the audience know, and they go, oh, yeah. And people say, wow, you guys sound just like you did 40 years ago, which I don't believe is true, but you take a lot of care to sound good, you know.
Well, I think you do, man. I've seen you guys like in like radio studios, just you two, and you know, you playing acoustic, and just you two together without any, you know, any incredible sound system or anything. You just
kind of help. Yeah,
you sound fantastic.
I think, you know, that's an artist's dream. I think is just to be able to pick an acoustic guitar or a piano and just sing. That's what I love to do, and I know Russell loves to do that too. And to be able to do that is great, you know, especially if you're out and wherever we are, if you're out even at a rest stop, people say, oh, can you sing something? And you get up and sing it, or you just give them a few bars, you know.
Yeah, that's
a lot of people won't do that, but we always do that because we love playing live.
That's real talent. I told Tom Rush that, you know, I said, man, there's nothing like a performer up on stage with a guitar and a story, yeah. You know? I mean, that's it. You know, you don't need a whole band.
Yeah, I mean, look at, there are a lot of people that can do that. Actually, funny enough, a lot of people from the 60s and 70s still do that.
Yeah.
But look at Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran plays on his own, and he plays stadiums. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
You know? So it's possible, yeah.
That's amazing. Well, you guys hit some milestones here. Besides the new album, you guys were recently performed your 5,000th concert, which I guess took place in Vegas, right?
Yeah, it was September 1st last year, and we've been kind of anticipating it for a while because we knew it was coming, and it was a great show. And now we can relax a bit more, and now that's passed, and carry on to the next one. But it was a great show, and it's a lot of shows, and. But of course, there are many more bands than us that have achieved that, and a lot more. But it is something that's unusual for a band. Usually, well, certainly today, bands don't stay together that long.
No, they
don't. But in the 70s and 80s, of course, they used to.
Yeah.
Because it was more of a career instead of suddenly wanting to be famous. You know, fame is something that is earned and achieved over a career. I don't think one can become famous overnight, you know.
Here's another little tidbit. You and Russell have never had an argument in over 44 years. Is that true?
It is true. Yeah, a lot of people don't believe it, but if you knew Russell, you would understand. Go, okay, I get it. You know, we just both kind of cruise along, and we both have different roles within the band, so we don't step on each other's toes. You know, I just like writing the songs. Russell wants to sing. And we have a great band, so we have it's a great show, and we have a great life. You know, we travel the world and do what we do best, and we're allowed to do that, which is fantastic. But we never argue at all. We just look at everything diplomatically and make the right choices, you know.
You know, I wish our government was like that.
Oh, me too. They should come to us for a lesson.
Maybe you guys should run. We'll all vote for you.
I don't know about that. I don't think I could stand the backbiting and the. It would be. I mean, rock and roll is bad, but I think politics would be so much more worse.
It's got to be horrible. I don't think I could do it either. Yeah. I'm too honest of a guy.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's ironic. These are your real names, right? Because it's so ironic how you both have Russell in your names. How weird is that?
It is. Yeah. It is, and, you know, even though Russell's a year older than me,
right.
We were both born 3 days apart as well.
You're kidding me. Wow.
There's that to consider. Yeah, it's weird. When we got to know a few little facts about ourselves after we just met, we went, oh, wow. Then not long after that, we realized that it was meant to happen. You know, we both saw the Beatles too when we were 14 years old. Myself in England and Russell in Australia, and that incident changed both our lives, and we didn't even know each other. So there's so many little things like that. You know, neither of us have a brother,
right?
And his sister, my sister, his sister is 4 years older than he, and mine is 4 years older than me. Little things like that. It's kind of weird, you know. It's spooky sometimes.
Ah, you guys were just meant to be together. That's it.
We are, yeah. It's a great relationship in the band. It really is. It's great.
So, what was it about the Beatles that you found interesting? Was it the harmonies? I mean, just the writing?
Know, it was everything.
Right.
It was all rolled up into one. Well, but more of the songs for me. I just love the songs.
Right.
Still do. And I don't think anybody's come close to writing such incredible songs. But they just sounded great. They were everybody's sweethearts in 63, 64. But the thing is, it's kind of like Elvis. You know, I'm a big Elvis fan. And, you know, Elvis had the whole package. He had these great songs. He looked amazing. He had the most incredible voice. And he was innovative. And the Beatles were the same in a different way. They had the songs. Everybody loved them. They were cheeky. They had that beautiful accent from England. Mm-hmm. And they had the good. They sounded great, you know. So when things like that come along, it's very, very rare, very unusual.
Yeah, it's crazy that we're still talking about them all these years, you know, like they're still, you know, huge.
Yeah.
You know?
Isn't that strange?
It is.
It's 63. It's a long time ago.
A long time.
We still talk about them as though they're the four young lads from Liverpool.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It really isn't anything that they do. Now there's a new big, long movie coming out about Let It Be, about the documentary they made for Let It Be.
Yeah.
And it'll shoot them to the top of everything again, you know, and it's unbelievable, you know.
What's his name? Ronnie Howard did that film too, about all their live shows recently. That was pretty good in color. You know, that was a good.
Oh yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The name of the band Air Supply was all you. You named it from a dream you had, which was cool. But do you remember that dream at all?
I do. You know, we had a single coming out.
Right.
So we were so excited because we thought, oh, we've made it. We're going to actually have a record which we can give to our grandchildren, you know.
Yeah.
And so they can't take that away from us. And we just needed a name, and we agreed that the next morning, whoever had the name, we would go with it. And I had the dream of the billboard, which has become kind of iconic now, but it's a true story. And I just saw this billboard, and it was white, with lights on all around it. And in the middle, in black, it just said Air Supply. And so it was certainly I don't know what it was. It was a moment, you know. We didn't know what it meant, but we said, okay, let's go with it, because we really had to. We were pushed into it. We said, well, it's not the greatest name, but it's all we've got. Let's go with it, and we did. And now here we are, 44 years later. You know,
man, I tell you one thing: time flies, doesn't it?
Oh my, it's amazing. It really is.
It's very,
I feel
very
much younger than I actually am. But I think maybe all people are like that.
Yeah.
You feel 22 or 23,
right,
but really you're three times older than, you know.
You know, I just interviewed a couple of guys in their 80s. John Mayall, who is another amazing guy. I mean, you should see the length of his tour, because he's got a new album out, but the tour is incredible. I don't see, he's like 84.
Wow. Well, it's funny, you know, earlier we spoke about when I used to go and see the Jaybirds.
Right.
Who became 10 years after and was so inspiring for me. But on the rock and roll end, I used to go to this club in Nottingham and see John Mayall's Blues Breakers.
Yep.
And they used to blow me away. So I, when I was growing up, apart from seeing the Beatles, I saw these great artists, like you're talking about, 10 years after,
mm-hmm.
John Mayall. And he was just amazing. And I actually saw him about 5 years ago in a club in Utah.
Huh.
And I went up and spoke to him. He didn't know who I was, you know. But he was just as good as ever, and he blew me away. And like you said, he's 80-odd years old. Amazing.
He is amazing. He sets up his own equipment, too, on stage.
I know. And it's funny, when I met him in Utah, he was at the merch table after the show selling his merch.
Yep.
And I thought, well, you don't see that very often. But I went up there and I introduced myself, etc. But that's cool, because he's a journeyman, you know.
Yes.
He plays a piano, course, and he plays everything. Harmonica, he's amazing.
He is amazing. He's one of those guys, you know, you hope, you know, there's nobody's going to forget him, because he was such a pioneer of what he did, you know, godfather of the British blues.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He was fantastic. I'm so glad he's I didn't know he had a new album. I'll grab it for sure. But I'm glad he's touring because I'll try and see him for sure.
Yeah, he's got some guest artists on that new album. He's, you know, it's an excellent album. I reviewed it for him he sounds great.
Yeah, when I saw him, and I saw him several times when I was growing up in Nottingham.
Right.
I remember every time I saw him, he'd have a different lineup, but it was Eric Clapton or Peter Green on guitar, Mick Fleetwood or Ainsley Dunbar on drums. And he had John McPhee on bass. He had all these incredible players. And it was, you know, now you look back at that, you go, wow, that's unbelievable. And I'm sure he still gets that caliber of players. Everybody wants to play with him, you know.
That's true. He's got his first woman in the band playing guitar. This is the first time he's ever had a woman in the band. So that's,
kind of
interesting, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Cool.
You were mentioning Utah where you saw him. Didn't you used to live in Utah?
Oh, I still do.
Oh, you still do?
I've lived there for 29 years.
Really?
Which, yeah, it's funny, you know, when I first moved there and people would ask me where I lived, I'd say, I live in Utah. They go, oh, really? Like it was some kind of disease or something. But now it's become a really hip place. And now I say, I come from Utah. Oh, wow. So I'm already in a really cool place. I love it. I really do. And I have the place that I used to dream about when I was growing up as a kid, you know.
It's a beautiful place. And the first reaction is, are you a Mormon, right?
Yeah, but I'm not. I'm actually an a practicing atheist. I don't believe in any of that stuff.
I saw a recent special that it's awesome. You know Brian Johnson from AC/DC?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's got a house here. I'm in Sarasota. He's got a house here in Sarasota, but he's got a show on, Life on the Road, and he did, interview with Robert Plant, and Robert Plant was saying about the same thing you did. He lives in the Welsh countryside, and he's inspired you know, by where he lives. And I think that's the same way with you with Utah, yeah. Right? Writing the music.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, funnily enough, we did a show with the guys from Led Zeppelin, with Robert Plant and the drummer from Queen, Roger Taylor. This was in India in 96. So we all hung out in the coffee shop and, you know, we were all talking about that. I said, well, yeah, I live in Utah. I said, yeah, and I knew he lived in a little Welsh village. And we were talking about what he grows. He's a gardener too, and I am, you know, so we had we were talking for about an hour about what he grows in the garden and how he does this and how he does that. And I'm talking to one of the greatest singers in the world, you know, and it was so cool. Really cool.
It's funny because when he was doing, he was doing some kind of rehearsal with one of his bands or something, I forgot he was with, oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank now. I forgot who it was. He teamed up with this woman singer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know you mean, yeah. Oh, they won a Grammy, too.
Yes. And she wanted to see what he, you know, they're kind of rehearsing in the house, and he didn't have a microphone, and he was very uncomfortable singing without a microphone.
Oh, I'll bet, because that's his tool of the trade.
Yeah. I found that very interesting, yeah. Now you...
Yeah, I've forgotten her name, too, but she's an incredible singer.
What you do with your guitar is pretty amazing. You play it upside down because you're a lefty, right?
Yeah, all my chords are backwards.
Huh.
I play a right-handed guitar upside down.
Upside down.
But for me, I learned that way, so it's not that unusual. But when people see it and play the normal way, which most people do, they're quite baffled as to how I figured out all the chords. But, you know, I have a lot of open strings, I have a lot of open tunings I use, so it makes it this big droney sound, and that's why I love the 12 string so much, because it has this beautiful drone sound, and I find it very inspiring.
Yeah, you play the 12 string beautifully. You really do.
Oh, thank you. You know, I'm a rhythm guitar player. I'm not a great guitar player, but what I do is kind of unique, and it adds a different sound. Because of the 12 string and because of my tunings and because I'm playing it upside down, it makes a different sound that nobody else can emulate.
Right.
They can't find those chords because I have to create the chords myself because it's upside down.
Y- Yeah, you got the fret markers on the opposite side.
Taylor makes a lot of my acoustic.
Yep. Yeah.
And they have to have everything reversed. They put the fret markers on the other side, which means I can never sell the guitar because nobody else would want it with the fret markers reversed. But I keep all my guitars anyway.
And you got a Collings Electric, right?
Yeah, I have a Collings Electric, and I also have a Collings 6-string, which Russell bought me for our 40th year together.
I saw that
on YouTube. That.
Yeah,
I play that on stage. They're beautiful guitars. I love Collings. They're just great guitars. I think they're from Austin, Texas. Yeah.
Now, is that the way Hendrix played his guitar too, or did he play the same?
You know, there's a lot of talk about it. I need to find out definitively. I know he played upside down, but he played, I think he reversed the string.
Right.
But I do need to find out. Yeah.
That's interesting. Huh, I think just you and Hendrix. I can't think of any other musicians that do that, really. Huh.
With me, I like the Collings Electric because it's upside down for me, but I like the guitar that's symmetrical. Like, for me, playing a Stratocaster wouldn't work because it looks really weird. And in fact, I think Hendrix played that way, but a Strat looks weird, and sometimes I'll play my Telecaster, which is almost symmetrical too, so when it's upside down, it doesn't look odd, you know?
Right. Yeah, I've got a Telecaster I've had for a long, long time. And as a matter of fact, I had Alvin Lee sign it. He played it backstage one day, which was really cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got to hang out with him.
He passed away like a year ago or something, I believe.
Yeah, a few years back. Yeah, very, very sad.
Yeah.
Really nice guy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it true?
Yeah, he was a great player.
I read somewhere that you guys were almost poor at one point where you were checking for change in hotel sofas.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We didn't make any money, you know, certainly in Australia.
Yeah.
When we did live shows, we couldn't make any money. We were getting like $100 a night, and we had to pay everybody and pay for our sound system. And so we were broke, and, you know, we used to lift cushions up. You can always find odd money under seat cushions. You know, if you want to scrape enough for a loaf of bread, then you can find it usually 50, 60 cents under there somewhere.
Well, you definitely paid your dues. You definitely paid your dues.
We have, you know, a lot of people probably don't realize that, but we have paid our dues. We've been in the trenches several times, you know.
That's amazing. And, I know you played Jamaica, which is pretty cool. I heard you on a radio show talking to a Jamaican gentleman about that show. And you've got a Jamaican kind of family, right? You're related to some people?
Yeah, my sister has lived there for a long time, maybe 45 years.
Wow.
In fact, we're playing, it's a charity show we do. We do it every couple of years, and we're going back in June to play it again.
My daughter-in-law's grandfather was from Jamaica too, and that was,
oh wow, yeah, they're great people.
Yeah,
I have a lot of in-laws and cousins and stuff that are Jamaican, and they're great people.
They are good people.
They love life, and they're just lovely people. They really are.
Yeah, they don't have much, but they're happy all the time. You know.
That's right. That's very true. But I like Jamaica. I've been there, you know, several times, and looking forward to going. In fact, I'm going a little early to have 3 or 4 days off before we do the show.
Yeah, it's a fun place. I went to Montego Bay. We went to the falls, Duns River Falls. We went there.
Oh, is that Negril or somewhere?
Yeah.
You got to find them though.
Negril, yeah. And we've spent most of our time in Montego Bay in that area. But
that's nice too.
Yeah. And you guys also performed in Cuba.
We did. I think that was 11 years ago. Yeah. A lot of people. That's our biggest crowd we've ever played to. I think it was 175,000. Yeah.
That's amazing. That really is amazing. I mean, you guys,
it was very cool. It takes a lot of energy playing to big, big crowds like that. I don't know how Queen used to do it every night or how they still do, because it kind of zaps your energy knowing there's so many people there. But I guess you get used to it, you know.
You know what was interesting about that concert? It rained, or you had a hurricane or something, and you had a place, you played solo, right? And for some people the second day with no electricity?
Yeah, we did our show, then we were going to do two nights, but this Hurricane Dennis came in and it was horrendous. It was, I saw my soul cars being blown down the street and the wind just pushing them out to sea, and the hotel was the Hotel National, which is a famous hotel. Winston Churchill stayed there, Hemingway stayed there, and all the people from surrounding areas were in the hotel because it was a stone building. It wasn't going to collapse in the hurricane. And there were several hundred people in the lobby of the hotel just sitting anywhere they could. There was no power. They had food and they had candles. And I thought, my God, I've got to play, you know. And I walked into the center of the lobby and I made an announcement. I said, hey, everybody, if you want to listen to some music, I'm going to play next door in this big ballroom. And the place, within 10 minutes, the place was packed. But they rolled a piano in and I played for like 45 minutes. I just played a lot of Enterprise songs, of course. In fact, they all were, but everybody loved it. And it was great, you know. It was just a spontaneous moment that moments like that are very rare.
You know, how many famous musicians would actually do that? That's why lots of good things happen to you guys. You know, because you got good karma. You do a lot of positive things, man.
Yeah, well, the thing is, when you're in a situation like that with no power or, you know, you're kind of handicapped, you turn it around and make the best of it. And after that little concert, I sat down with three young men from Eton, which is a very posh school in England, the poshest school in England where the princes and kings go. And I became really good friends with these young guys.
Right.
And they were in the dinner suit. You know, if you go to Eton, you have dinner, you always wear a tuxedo. And they were in tuxedos and they just loved it. And we became good friends. And, it was nice because at that time there were people from all over the world in Cuba. And I'm sure there still is. But to be in that hotel, you know, underneath a big portrait of Ernest Hemingway was pretty trippy. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm half Cuban, by the way.
Oh, okay.
My mom was Cuban.
I actually loved it. I want to go play there again. I really do.
Well, it's a lot easier to travel there nowadays, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it is. I need to check out how it is these days, because it seems to change all the time.
Yeah.
Restrictions, and then there's not restrictions. I need to find out, but I'd love to play there again.
What was it like working with Clive Davis? You know, such a powerful guy.
It was great. Most of the time it was great. In fact, almost all of the time it was great.
Right.
You know, he was very, he knew what he wanted and he just always got it. And he was always right. That was the thing with Clive. He knew he was right. Even though you may not agree with him initially, you know, you go along with it and he'll say, if you wanted to go to number one, you should do this, you
right.
know. And that's what happened, and he was right every time. So our relationship was a great one. He was a really, really very nice guy to us all the time, you know.
Yeah, he's been around the block a few times.
Yeah.
You guys made so many great hits, you know, Lost in Love, Here I Am. I mean, I love all this music, and everybody else does. The on YouTube, you guys have so many views, you know, millions and millions of views for all you. I mean, All Out of Love has 78 million plus views. That's like phenomenal.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
78,364,000 views. Making Love Out of Nothing at All, 70,802,000 views. I mean, I've never heard that before.
Wow.
You know?
That's unbelievable. I had no idea it was that high. I need to get on more often.
It's extremely high. YouTube's is a great tool, you know? I mean, what a difference between, you know, just putting on an album. I do miss those days of going to the record store, but, you know, just going to YouTube and you know, clicking something and it's there. It's pretty amazing.
I mean, the whole internet is, you can find out anything you like, and within a few seconds, you have the answer at your fingertips. It's quite amazing. It really is. It's mind-boggling for me, you know.
Do you think bands, like a new band that needs to be recognized, do you think they have more advantages today or less advantages than you guys did back in the day?
I think they have more advantages because the, you know, instrumentation, I mean, the synthesizers, in, when we were coming through, the synthesizers were just beginning and they were kind of very primitive. Really, it was, when you played, it was acoustic guitar or electric guitars and pianos, and that's what we had, a piano, but now there's all kinds of sounds, so yeah. there's that advantage. Plus, people make albums on their phone, you know, they really do. They make record on their phones, and it sounds pretty good. So the only disadvantage, I think, is that everybody's doing it, so there's so much out there now, and it's hard to wade through it.
Right.
In fact, virtually impossible. I think you need to, if you find an artist that you like, you follow them and see what they do. But it's hard. There's so many new artists. I mean, who has the time to listen to them? You know I don't.
I agree with you 100%. There's a lot of, you know, I'm really into progressive rock, and there's a lot of new progressive rock bands out there. But like you said, there's way too many of them, you know? And, but there's a lot of good talent out there. There really is.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had the time, but I don't. There's just so much going on with us all the time that needs monitoring all the time. We travel so much. So I kind of treasure 2 or 3 hours where I don't have to do anything, you know.
Yeah. You had a song that you wrote pretty recently, I Was In Love With You.
Oh, right, yeah. We haven't recorded that. I wrote it for the musical, for the Enterprise musical, and it was a duet, so we've been trying to figure out how we're going to do that.
Right.
But I love the song, and we played it a couple of times, and it was got great reviews, so that's coming. We haven't recorded it yet, but we're going to.
And you say the live album is out, it's officially out right now.
It is out, yeah. Just.
And is that out on Amazon as well?
Yeah, Amazon, all those places, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But one thing you were talking about that I found intriguing too was before a show you juice a lot, right? You got a juicer?
Yeah, we travel with a juicer. And our promoter always provides all organic produce of different kinds. Yeah, I juice. We all juice now, pretty much everybody, the band and crew. We're big juicers. But it gives you such incredible... I can tell straight away once I take it. But I'm a kind of a health freak as well.
Good for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys, singers that don't, you know, their voices really change dramatically because they probably smoked. You know, which is...
Oh, yeah. Well, I've never smoked, and Russell hasn't, so we've been very fortunate in that area.
Right.
But I think the older you get, you start to pay more attention to your health, and especially when people of your own age start dying from strokes, heart attack, this, blood pressure, whatever, you don't want to be in that category, so... The only way to not be one of those is to look after yourself and to eat responsibly and to feel good and exercise. You know, I'm a big advocate for that. Well, but people need to make a choice when they get in their 60s, certainly. A choice has to be made, and if you don't make it, you're not going to make it.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's well put. I'm in my 60s now, and you know, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good friends with all my doctors.
I'm vegan, you know, so I don't eat any dairy or any meat of any kind, and I just feel great all the time. I mean, there are days when I'm a little under the weather, but you know, I never get sick anymore, and I just feel good. I'm at a nice weight, and I can get on stage, you know, because I'm coming up to be 69. I can get on stage and I've got the goods, you know. We sound great and we look great, and that's what we're very proud of, you know. And we'll keep doing that.
Well, sleep is very important. I mean, there's a lot of reports that, you know, you can die early if you don't get enough rest and everything. How do you get your rest on tour?
You know, that's one thing that is difficult. You kind of grab it when you can, you know. Often you sleep on planes, although that's not the perfect way to sleep.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have no choice. I mean, if I have a travel day, and I know what my schedule is, I plan times. I'll say, okay, I'm going to get to the hotel. I've got 2 hours. I need to get a nap in. I mean, I sound like somebody's grandpa, which I am, by the way. But you need to nap. You get it when you can. And, you know, after we do a show, it takes me like 3 hours to calm down. So, you know, I'll have a glass of wine, but then sometimes it's hard to go to sleep. So then I bring my own tea on the road. I have a sleep tea that's really cool.
Oh, good.
So you make it work. You find ways to make it work.
You know? Right. And you guys still fly commercial airlines? You don't have a private jet?
Sometimes we rent a private jet. It travel between two cities is very difficult,
right,
and a time issue. We'll rent a private plane, and we do that not often, but we do it. Yeah, it's just a small little company that, you know, they have these little prop planes, and we use those, and they're great. You know, I wish we could do it all the time, but it's very expensive. You know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Here's a question I ask everybody, Graham. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
That's Paul McCartney, without a doubt.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've never met McCartney, but I'd love to, being a songwriter. And he's, of course, my hero, my mentor, and the guy I grew up with. And the reason why I'm a songwriter now is because of this. I'd love to meet him. And to work with him would be a dream, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that all these years you haven't met him. You know, you would have thought by now.
I know. Well, I was supposed to, 10 years ago, he was playing in Denmark, and I flew over there because his tour manager used to work for us.
Right.
From Liverpool. And we arranged it, and I was going backstage before the show, and I was backstage. I was in Paul's dressing room, and I started shaking, you know, and sweating. I thought, what am I going to say? I was so nervous.
That's funny.
His plane, because he flies in and out of home, you know, he doesn't stay out anymore. So before the show, he was flying in, and the weather was bad, and his plane couldn't take off for like 2 hours. So by the time he got there, he just had to change and get on stage, so I couldn't meet him, and he didn't do anything after.
Right.
So, you know, I missed out on that, but it was one of these days. I've always thought of calling him up and saying, I'm coming to England, I'd love to have a cup of tea or something. I wonder what he would say, you know.
He'd probably invite you to his dressing room to hang out, you know?
probably, yeah. He probably would, yeah. That would be a dream of mine, which I need to address. I really do.
All you got to do is get a hold of his publicist, you know. Have Steve call him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I could. I could. I need to do that, yeah.
Have you met any of the Beatles?
Yeah. I've met Ringo twice.
Right.
Which is very cool. I mean, he's a Beatle, you know, and there's only two left. But he was very nice, and I've heard that he's a really nice guy when you get to know him. You know?
Right. I think it's funny when you know, legendary musicians like yourself get excited about other musicians and you know, act like, you know, big fans and, you know, and still get excited about it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, well, they're the people you grow up with, certainly the Beatles, but, you know, I'm a big Sting fan, and I'm a big Peter Gabriel fan. And
me too, yeah.
Those people are, you know, they all work just like we do. They do a lot of shows, and when you do run into them, it's quite a thrill, quite a pleasure, you know.
I
see how they live and what they do.
Yeah. I don't get nervous. I've interviewed thousands of people, and really the only, you know, I've interviewed Julian Lennon, which was really cool because he sounds just like John. He's such a nice guy. And,
yeah.
And I've interviewed Pete Best.
Oh, cool.
But,
oh, wow. Yeah,
he's a good guy, too.
Oh, great.
But the only guy I really got a little nervous about was Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull. I interviewed him twice because I know he's an intelligent guy, and you got to be on your A game when you talk to him, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've heard that, too. But I believe he still does shows.
Oh, yeah. He's still touring. He's still touring. Yeah. He's got a big tour out there as well. Graham,
yeah,
anything?
That's great.
Anything else you'd like to promote or chat about? We got the new album covered. What else is going on? Anything else that we need to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we've covered pretty much everything. I mean, we just, yeah, the new album is great to talk about that, and just our shows, but we're just one of those old warrior war horses, just keep playing shows, getting old and keep playing. That's what we do.
It's amazing.
All the bands like this do the same thing, you know.
You guys are an incredible band, you know, awesome songwriters, awesome musicians. You're playing in New York tonight. Puerto Rico, I think, on the 24th. You'll be in Indiana March 1st. You'll be at the MGM Grand Detroit March 2nd. You got a lot of dates coming up, including the Orleans Hotel in Vegas. You'll be in Vegas for, what, three days? Got your schedule here. You got a lot of shows coming up. So, you know, people need to just go to
your every year we do more shows, it seems.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's happening, but it seems to happen.
I don't know how you do it, man. You know, I don't think I could do it. You know, every day, traveling, you know, like you do, and hotels and eating out and all that stuff. You gotta have a knack for it.
It's just you've gotta love it. Otherwise it'll destroy you. You've gotta be a road warrior.
Right.
And a lot of people aren't. So.
Exactly. Graham, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. More importantly,
it's
for all the incredible music you've given to us over the years and continue to bring. We're looking out for you. We're going to buy the new live album with the Symphony Orchestra, which is awesome. We're looking forward to the new album and your upcoming tour. And I thank you once again for being on the show, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure once again, and we can do it in the future. Thank you, Ray. It's great. Thank you for your time, too.
That'll be great. Good luck on the road, man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. For more information about Graham Russell and Air Supply, visit www.airsupplymusic.com, and also on Facebook, of course, www.facebook.com/airsupplymusicofficialpage. I would like to thank Steve Levescu, president of Lock Media and Marketing, for arranging this incredible interview with Graham Russell today. And of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom, for bringing the magic to us each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And also, don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business. Available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.